The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
It's time for your weekly road crew tip, brought to you by the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series and Ken Barr Films.
That's right. It is time for your weekly tip right here on Memphis Metal Mondays. It is Monday, January the 8th. And if you guys are just tuning in and you're trying to figure out what it is you're tuning in the middle of, it is the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series tip, brought to you by Ken Barr Films and, of course, Radio Memphis. And this has been a thing. You guys have seen the logos all over the place. You've seen us do some interviews. You've seen us do the Radio Memphis load-in. And what we're doing is that we're sitting down and we're talking to some of the coolest industry pros that work behind the scenes. You know, think about that incredible record that you just bought. Think about that cool show that you just went to, or whatever, that cool event, and all the craziness that goes on behind that. It's somebody is in charge of that. And of course, you know, we've been able to do some really cool things and catch up with some cool people. And over the course of time, you know, we've made some fantastic friendships, including the one that we're going to talk to tonight. Those of you that may have been had the opportunity to tune into the Radio Memphis Load-In Show, which happens on the first Thursday of every month right here at radio-memphis.com, is where we have a two-hour live show dedicated to the road crew, and we have some fun. This past Thursday, which was the first one for January, we got to sit down and we got to talk to the UK, and we got to talk to Kevin Batty Walsh. Well, what was beautiful about that was that he had some tips that he needed to share, so I made sure that he returned so that he could share those tips. And of course, he has become probably one of my ultimate favorite ones. I love to catch up with. He is definitely a brother from another mother, and he is talking to me from the future. Hey, Batty.
Good evening from the future, or good morning where I am.
you don't even take a sip of tea, honey. Take a sip out of that gallon mug you just sent to me. I showed it. That's a beautiful mug, by the way.
But yes, from Monterey, that was. Yeah. Nearly as big as your jug of coffee.
Well, you know, cheers.
I can see you.
I can see. Well, you know, you showed me your picture, so I can just pretend I'm seeing you. How are you doing, honey?
I'm good, yeah. It's all right, yeah.
Yeah.
Getting up early.
I know. And, you know, you are so funny because I love the fact that you're willing to do this with me. And I told you that if there wasn't, like, this whole ocean between you and me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was, like, I don't know, 6 hours difference between you and me, you know, I probably couldn't shake you out of this studio and you would wind up becoming, like, a permanent fixture here.
I'd be in the corner there by that TV screen where your mates sit.
We have a blow up doll down here too, man. You can actually get to know her. Her name is Rosie.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Her name is Rosie.
Rosie, not Loretta.
No, it's Rosie. Rosie Palms.
Rosie Palms. Rosie Cheeks. Cousin, Rosie Cheeks. Happy Elvis birthday day today, Memphis.
It is Elvis's birthday, and I don't care what kind of show, what genre you're playing and stuff like that, if you don't stop down and at least think about that for 2 seconds. And I tell everybody, you know, and I was talking about it earlier in the show, is like, you know, his mother bought him the guitar for his 11th birthday. He didn't want the guitar. He wanted a rifle, you know, because he's a Southern boy.
Oh.
And she was like, no, the guitar is proper. This would be more of a proper gift. And if she had not done that, he would not have practiced. He would not have won the talent show at his high school. And he would not have continued on.
He'd have been some homicidal maniac.
Correct. You know, a redneck that knows how to deer hunt.
He'd have probably done Life Below Zero. That's a good program, that, isn't it?
See?
It moves, shoot it.
See?
He liked his guns, Elvis, and Coop, Alice Cooper told me a great story.
Oh, yeah?
And he said he'd never told anybody, but I think he has since, but this was like a few years ago, and there was me and Alice and his bodyguard, and we had to drive from America, I think it might have been Detroit, up into Canada. And in this limousine, this security guard was driving it, John Camp, who was from England, and me and Coop in the back. And it was a couple of hours, whatever the drive was. And he said, hey, did I ever tell you about the time I met Elvis? No. He said, I'd never told anybody this story. Oh, go on then.
Okay.
And he said, Elvis was playing in Las Vegas forever, where they all play at the whatever the palace is.
Yeah.
And he said, we were doing a gig, and at the end of the gig, Elvis's people come over and said, Elvis wants to meet you, come to the hotel. So he said, I went to the hotel and some guys frisked me down and put me in the elevator and said, hit that button and go up to his floor. And he said, I got out the elevator and three more guys frisked me down and said,
wow,
knock on that door. And he said, I knocked on the door and he said, Elvis opened it in a bathrobe and said, well, you're the guy with the snake, it's cool shit, come on in. He said, I go in his room and he shuts the door and he gets me in a stranglehold and that's a gun to my head. And I'm like, you can't even, I'm going to show you how to disarm somebody with a gun.
Are you
point the gun at me.
Serious?
And he said, they've frisked me two or three times. He's given me a gun. And he said, point it at me. I'm going to show you how to disarm someone. And he said, all I can think of is, I'm holding a gun on the king. And he said, 2 seconds later, I was on the floor without the gun in my hand.
There it is. There it is. He knew what he knew.
Alex Cooper with a gun on the king.
That is crazy. No, I have never heard that. I have never heard that. That is crazy as hell. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, and a lot of people, I mean, everybody know, there's so many people that know so much of the history, you know, of Elvis as it is anyway, you know, but there's a thing, you know, that he always had this, he always wanted to collect police badges, you know, from anybody.
Yeah.
And of course, and he always wanted to be that, he wanted to be kind of like that top gun, that top agent, that top person that you want, you know, that you called on when you wanted to, like, you know, break open in case of emergency. And he had this real serious just love affair with that entire idea, you know. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, what it was that he did behind the scenes himself, you know, to train and things like that, especially, you know, with the karate, you know, and everything else, you know, the jiu-jitsu and all that. So I mean, but the fact that he pulled it on the coop,
yeah, and the coop's saying, like, I've been frisked by all these people downstairs, I've been frisked in the corridor, I've been told to knock this door, all these bodyguards have frisked me, I've got in, he's got me in a stranglehold, put a gun in my hand and said, point it at me. So he said, no, I've got a gun, I'm the king. I don't know if it's loaded. I don't know what it, you know.
Oh, it was probably loaded. It was probably loaded.
Probably.
It was.
I mean, I toured with Bad Company. We toured with Ted Nugent in 95.
Right, I remember you telling me that.
He always has a gun on him, but I didn't know he's some kind of, I don't know what you call them over there. Special constables are called over here. Where he's a police officer.
Okay.
And I've seen him deal with somebody at an airport, and he just calmly walked over to him, pulled his gun out, and arrested this guy. he's some I don't know what you call him in the volunteer police, something or other. But yeah.
So how is it that you wind up with Coop, you know, riding in the back of wherever, going to wherever, just on your own, and you get to hear this story? What were you doing?
We were on tour, and we had to go. It wasn't a very long ride. I remember we had to cross the Canadian border, so it was probably from Detroit up to somewhere in Canada. Mm. And it was me and Coop and his bodyguard, who was a good friend of mine from England, John Camp. So it was two English guys and an American.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I don't know why the buses had gone on ahead. Or I don't really. Maybe it might have been a visa thing or something. Can't remember. But we had a great chat in this limousine on the way up, and you know, John driving it. It felt great, man.
Of course it did. Are you kidding?
And then he goes, "Did I ever tell you about the time I met Elvis and held a gun on him?" I'm like, "No." Had a gun on the king.
Only you, man. Daddy, only. Oh, wow. Only
and
you.
He opened the door and said, "You're the guy with the snake. That's cool shit."
That's exactly why.
All right,
Well, you know, we were chit-chatting and we were exchanging some messages, and you know, one of the things, you know, since we're talking about guns and we're talking about safety and we're talking about things, you actually have a tip. And it's funny, you've been telling me about this tip that we haven't been able to do on air.
Yeah.
And so I've been waiting for like a while to figure out what it was that you're going to share with us here, you know, so that everybody can be enlightened. So I'm gonna you know, this is tip number 21 on the Road Crew Radio.
21.
Yeah, 21 Road Crew Radio series. So what are you bringing tonight?
Well, I've been hanging on to this one since about, I think I was looking at my diary. I think it was October.
Oh gosh. And, okay.
And in the space of 3 days, two different gigs at the same venue.
Okay.
I had these two incidents. One with an English group with English crew, and an American group with American crew.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up two of my crew getting hurt, up one of them.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, it was the Americans that hurt us, not the English. And these were big gigs. These were at the Barclaycard Arena in Birmingham, which is like 25,000 seat arena. It's, you know, a 30 truck tour and a 20 truck tour, and they're coming to town.
Wow.
And it's quite, I don't know how to put it. It's when you're in somebody else's playpen, you have to play by their rules.
Yes.
And if I come over to your country, the playpen starts when I cross that border. When I'm in your country, that's the big playpen. I have to abide by your rules. I can't walk down the street with a can of beer in my hand like I could do in England, otherwise I'll be arrested. And then in there, you've got your gig, I don't know, Madison Square Garden or wherever, whatever.
Right.
You have to play by them rules too.
Right.
That's
right.
Their playpen.
Right.
And we had a band turn up, American band, I won't name them because it's not their fault. And they had some equipment that this was the first arena gig that they'd done on the tour, and they'd been out for some time, and they had some equipment they wanted to try out, and we figured out how we're going to get it on and off stage.
Okay.
And during the changeover, they suddenly changed their mind, and I said, well, leave this equipment on stage, it's out of everybody's way, it's out of the sight lines, it's great, it's behind the curtain. And no, it has to come off, it has to come off, there's no need for it to come off, it can stay there.
Right.
Later on there'll be more crew, more light, easy to get off, lots of people, let's just leave it. So I turn me back and go on stage, and I come back down the ramp off the stage, and there's two of my crew doubled over on the floor with this equipment on top of them, and one of their crew shouting at them.
Wow.
And I've stopped and assessed the situation.
Sure.
And the best thing sometimes you can do is stand back and watch.
Mm.
And the local security had got first aiders and whatnot, and then I have to find out what's gone on and why we didn't leave the equipment on stage. To cut a long story short, the one guy tapped me on the shoulder, the stage manager, and on the ramp at the back of the stage, and he said, I don't want to be delicate, it's a delicate situation, I know, but I've got to get the band on in 3 minutes.
Mm.
And I said, well, I won't be delicate at all. There are two sets of stairs either side of the stage that you asked for. Use them. This ramp is out of action. Oh, by the way, apart from being crew boss, I'll tell you, I'm the senior health and safety guy for this crew.
Oh.
This ramp is now closed, and the loadout could be really, really long now. You just injured two of my guys, and you want me to get them off the ramp while they're being treated to by paramedics. You need to remember where you are. This is our house, our rules. You've broken them, and that's the result of it.
Wow.
He wandered off. I said, you best go and do what you can now to get your band on stage, because now you've got 1 minute. Otherwise, I'll pull the plug. And he did what he did, and I spoke to the tour manager and started taking photos of this equipment for my accident report.
Wow.
And it was like, what are you doing? I said, well, I've got to take photos for my report. You can't do that. I said, well, if you try and stop me, a senior health and safety official, you'll be now breaking the law. Ah, okay, carry on.
Wow.
So we all got it sorted out, and there was no fussing and fighting. There was a bit of a to-do, and everything was cool at the end of it. 2 days later, back in the same gig, with an English band, with an English crew, 40 trucks.
Okay.
Really good. Really went well. On the loadout, there's one guy on that crew that was, for some reason, was really pissed off. And he started pushing big metal dollies around and crashing into his own gear, his lighting gear. They dropped it down and he smashed into it.
Right.
So I wasn't crew boss on that one. I was one of 40 crew, so I went over to the stage manager, who was a great guy, and I grabbed his eye. I said, listen, with respect, can you do me a favour? He went, yes, Pat. I said, watch that guy of yours there. Just watch him for the next 10 seconds. And he watched, and I watched. I said, do you think that's acceptable? No, he said, he's had a bad day. I said, well, will you stand up in court and say he had a bad day, my lord, when you hurt somebody or killed him? What you need to do is tell him to go to the bus, chill out, or I'll stop this loadout now, and it'll be quicker than you can say Brexit.
Wow.
And it's all with respect I say this to you. And he went, thanks for that, and thanks for your respect. And off he went, pulled the guy out of the way. Nobody else got involved, and the loadout went smooth. What you have to... I don't know how it works over in America, but in this country, whatever you do, whatever your job is, whether you flip burgers, put wheels on cars, you're a doctor, whatever you do.
Sure.
Clean toilets. You have a duty of care to yourself, firstly, and to everybody else that you work with or that you come into contact with
right.
in your work.
Right.
So if you're from America, first of all, you're governed by the laws of this land when you come into it. And then when you walk into the Barclaycard Arena, I'm governed by their rules, the house rules, and so are you. So you have, anywhere you work, you have a duty of care to yourself first.
Sure.
And you're guilty by your acts or your omissions. Mm. The American guy didn't have any duty of care over my crew or me or his band.
Sure.
I got two guys on the floor. And that gig could have stopped that gig. It wouldn't have gone on.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to do that, but if I had to.
And I'm glad, Batty, you know, that you have brought this particular thing
it's
up.
It's a heavy subject, but
it is. Well, you know, but it's a necessary, it's a very necessary subject.
It could be Barclaycard Arena, or it could be the tiny shitty little pub with 50 people in that you play every week. You're still their house. You're a guest.
Yes.
You have some respect, whether you're 40 strong crew that have come in and we'll see you again next week at the NEC, or whether you're two guys loading into a bar somewhere. You play by the house rules, and when you've got 40 trucks and lots of equipment flying around there, you don't want somebody that's had a really bad day. It's just annoyed him. Hey, I don't know why he was annoyed. Maybe he'd split up with his wife back home or something that happened. Either way, you can't be in my playpen.
Nope.
Acting like that, especially at your age, a seasoned
nope.
roadman.
Nope.
And you need to go away and chill out. I'll handle it the way I did, which is I'll have a word with your boss and mm-hmm. let him deal with you and send you to the bus, because if I handle it, the loadout will stop. I'll just whistle and the whole thing will stop.
Wow.
And we saw him again the week after and he was fine. So he was having a bad day, but you can't stand up in court when you've killed somebody or injured somebody mm-hmm. and go, he was having a bad day.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay, then. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
You can go then. That's all right. We'll let you off.
No. And that's not how that works. And, you know, there is a sense of respect. You know, there's a respect. There's a sense of respect for place and stance. And yes, I mean, it's, you know, if I come to your house, you know, if I come to your house, you know what I mean? It's yeah. one of those things where, okay, you know, Batty, do I take my shoes off before I come in? Well, what would you like for me to do? Where do you want me to put my coat? Where would, you know what I mean? Where would you like for me to, you know, set this down, you know? And yeah. I mean, it's the same thought, you know, and it's the same idea. And, you know,
it was disappointing because the two incidents, I did say to the guy on the second day, I said, look, the reason I'm telling you this is because the day before yesterday, two of my guys were injured in this gig by the incompetence of touring seasoned crew. That's not going to happen tonight, and I'm not the crew boss, but that's not going to happen because I've got a duty of care for me and mm-hmm. everybody I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't shout, raise my voice, nothing. It was all done really quiet, out the way, and it was done. The guy was out of the way.
Sure.
I mean, if it had been the Beacon Theatre in New York, everything would have just stopped.
Well, and everything would have been done, and everything would have been over, and everything. Yeah,
yeah,
and there would have been no way to do any of that. No,
I don't know how you do it in America. Whether an ordinary worker is just covered by these rules, but you if you work with somebody, you're responsible for them, and if you interact with anybody. So if you work behind a counter and you have to serve customers,
mm-hmm.
you're responsible for them as well.
Ultimately, that's supposed to be the idea. I mean, ultimately, there's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be the tour manager, you know, that's in charge of, you know, set idea. Just, I mean, look, you've worked in the States too, Batty.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And even in that essence, as well as you running your deal and your gig and your company mm-hmm. and stuff in the UK and in England and everything. And it's still the same. It's the same pre-course of what should happen. And this is one of those things where, you know, this is, you know, when you're at that level, especially, but it, you know, my personal thing is whether it is a pub and there's only 50 people or whether it is an arena and there's 50,000 people, you know,
right.
how you do your job either way is going to translate. And so, you know,
that's
it's like us telling our bands, if you're playing to five people, you're playing to 5 million. You give them the same show. You know what
you
I mean?
Still be professional about it.
Right. You still give them the same show. So whether you are preparing for 50 people to enjoy an event or you're preparing for 50,000 people to enjoy an event, there's protocol and there's a system and there's things in place and you keep everything safe and you keep everything where it's supposed to be. And now, and yeah. Of course, when you're talking about, you know, the levels, especially where you're at, you know, now, you know, over the course of time, I mean, you know, this is not fun and games. You know, this is serious equipment. This is serious, heavy, big, you know, and it can be a very traumatic experience, you know, and
it can be extremely dangerous. But when I'm sure when some people, it always still amazes me when some people are leaving the Barclaycard Arena or arenas like that. You've got them in America, you've got bigger ones, and they look back and they see all this gear coming down. I know before I got into it, I used to look at them and think, they just look like a load of ants, man. Why are they not hitting each other and running into each other with all that shit?
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got a 40-man crew bringing down a show, it must look fascinating from the back of the gig when you look at all these people and lights are coming down and there's people going everywhere. Nobody's getting hurt. No one's running into each other. Because it's
orchestrated.
It's controlled chaos.
It's orchestrated. You know,
everybody knows what they're doing. The locals know what they're doing.
Yes.
Touring crew know what they're doing. It only needs one. If I had a bad guy on the crew at the Barclaycard, it'd soon be found out by a touring crew, wherever they were from. They'd know straight away that it was the first time the guy had been on a crew.
But it's,
I mean, my first experience of America, my very first gig in America was Radio City Music Hall in New York, and that was my first introduction to local crew.
Aye.
What an introduction into how that works. Man, I couldn't touch shit. No, I was getting annoyed because I couldn't touch anything. And they're like, no, this is how it works here. This is how it goes. Now, I'm probably one of the few people that's worked on a dark stage at the Beacon Theatre in New York, and I've done it three times.
See?
People go, how can you work on a dark stage at the Beacon?
Mm-hmm.
Because I get on with the guys and I give them respect and they respect me, and I never don't get in the way and I don't mess up their gig.
That's a big thing, and there's a big,
yeah.
I am so glad that you did, you know, Batty, that you did bring this up as an example for a tip, you know, because, you know, not only is a show dependent upon, you know, everybody being able to do what they're supposed to do and get everything in and out and up and loaded and you know, and where they're supposed to be, but, you know, for the simple safety factors, it's tremendous. And that's, you know, and that's that was another thing for me, you know, really realizing what it is that everybody was ultimately responsible for. And, you know, and it's one of those things where, I mean, think about those big stadiums and stuff when you've got all those, that big gear and all that stuff, you know, and you got to fly stuff over and you've got to, you know what I mean? And it's, you know, that's some serious gear, you know, one offshoot, man, and one mistake and that stuff comes crashing down. That's, you know, that's bad. You know, that's a bad situation that can happen. And in 2.8 seconds, you know, there's some serious stuff that can go down from that. And a lot of people don't realize.
I've had motors slip over me on maiden gigs, and the lightning truss has come down at a speed and stopped probably 5 feet off my head. But, man, I hit the deck. It just scares the hell out of you. And just these things can happen. But when somebody's being reckless, that's different.
That's different.
When somebody hasn't got a duty of care, which in this country you're bound by legally, you will have a duty of care because you'll go to prison otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whether you sew shirts, flip burgers, put wheels on cars, build aeroplanes, whatever you do, you are bound by duty of care. And if people say who comes first, health and safety-wise, I always say I do, because if I'm injured, I can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through that with the aeroplanes, when they say the masks drop down, if the oxygen goes, put your mask on first.
Yes.
Before you help anybody else.
Yes, yes,
take
that's
care
right.
of yourself, because otherwise you'll be unconscious, you won't help anybody. But it was okay. The two things were resolved, and there was no shouting and bawling, which Dan Stevenson might find hard to believe, but there's no need to do that.
He's in the middle of putting together, a corporate gig right now. Like, as we speak.
He would know about that with the amount of things he does, the size he's dealing with. Man, that's...
He would. It's a serious thing. I mean, he makes no bones about it. None. None.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, you know, this, you know, this ain't, you know, this ain't Candyland. This is, you know, this is some serious shit, you know.
It's the real deal, yeah. And some... for some reason, touring crews, some will wear hard hats and some won't. And when you come to an arena like the one, the Bartley Car in Birmingham and the NEC, amber lights flash on the loading, and there's an announcement constantly saying, while the amber lights are flashing, wear your hard hats. And I'm not going to go around to the touring crew and go, where's your hard hat? That's the production manager's job.
Sure.
And if they don't want to wear it, that's up to them. But if something falls on the head, that's up to them. I haven't got a responsibility for that. That's down to their manager. Mm-hmm. So I've got a responsibility to point it out to the tour manager or the production manager. Hear that announcement. That's going to keep going all day.
You're going to sit there and tell me that they haven't signed something that says that they've been provided the gear if they choose not to wear it, that's on them.
Well, a lot of them have their own gear, but at every all the arenas in Birmingham, there's a huge bucket of hard hats that you can, you know, big bin full of it, big wheelie bin full of hard hats. You can use them, and you can, you know, that's it. I mean, if they say I can't wear one because I've got a bad head, then we'll go and do another job. Then you're not working on this floor.
You don't need to be doing this if you can't wear one of these. Yeah,
don't sit in the production office.
I'm
not that heavy with people, but when accidents happen, that's when I have to sort of go, I don't care if it's 3 minutes till your band's on. You've just put yourself in the frame here because you're showing no duty of care to me or my injured people.
Mm-mm.
You want them out of the way off your ramp so you can get a band on. How about I stop the show? You've now got 1 minute to get your band on, up the two sets of stairs that you asked for. If you get this ramp, it's out of action, pal.
I'll leave
it there with you. So anyway, went off and got the band were cool. The band were super cool. They were really cool.
Well, good.
And I can't blame the bands. That's why I wouldn't name the bands, but
yes,
not their problem.
Yes.
They don't know what's going on, really.
They're just ready to get on the show. Yeah, get on the stage and, you know, and perform.
Yeah.
You know?
They didn't even know anything happened, which is the way it should be.
Exactly. That way there's no commotion and there's no upset and there's no, you know, it doesn't affect the performance. And you know, that means you guys continue to do your jobs, you know, by making sure that they're taken care of. And that's beautiful.
That one was slightly unprofessional on their part. I was really annoyed with that.
Just perfect.
No professionalism, you know.
Perfect tip, yes. Someone else's playground, okay? Your playpen, the way you put it. You have to abide by their rules if you are in somebody else's playpen, or else somebody really can get hurt.
And it'll just make for an easier day, an easier gig. This Birmingham crew is professional. We didn't bat an eyelid. We just told them that the way it is, and we'll get the loadout done. But take people away that are maybe having a bad day. Let them go and sit on the bus and have a beer or a tea or whatever.
Right.
Get them off the floor.
Perfect.
Good. It's a heavy one, really, but it's important.
Extremely important. No, you needed to bring that up, and I'm so glad you did, because you actually gave some fantastic examples as to, you know, what could happen, you know, and that's important, you know, and that's extremely important. Which also, again, you know, Batty, it lends itself to my utter respect that I personally have for what it is that you do, you know what I mean? Especially when you have that mannerism and you have that attitude about what it is that you do, and that you have that, you know, that respect for what it is that you do. And, you know, and it's one of those things where it's and that's the thing I try to make everybody understand here too, is that especially when they tune into these tips and they tune into our shows and, you know, and stuff that we're doing for this road crew stuff, is that you just don't realize what circus is really going on here. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way, in that there's so many balancing acts, there's so many balls up in the air, there's so many things that are going on, and there's so many things, and literally it's a very orchestrated suite, you know, of things that are happening. And in order to do that, you mean you have to be pro.
It is. I mean, even on the smallest of the larger tours, if you got two or three trucks, it's still a lot of gear. And the thing is, when you watch a good crew that have been touring, it just goes in, there's no problem. Everybody just does it. You just need one slightly out of kilter for some reason, having a bad day, whatever, and it can lead to something horrible and nasty. I would never want to stop a crew from loading out. I've been there and I've done it. I wouldn't want to do that, but that's like the ultimate that would happen. But hopefully it never does, because people go, hang on a minute, we'll deal with this, don't
It's bad enough. Look, it's bad enough that you have to take care of the band that you're working for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Making sure that you get everything right and make sure you get them on and off and make sure you get them where they need to be. And you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, when you've got that going on, you know, too, that's a different thing. And like I said, you know, it's, and I don't care if it's a small venue or if it's a small pub or if it's a huge arena, you know, the attitude, how you approach it. You know, we were raised, you know, if you were going to clean toilets for a living or you were going to sign checks as an executive, you know what I mean, and sit, yeah, you know, behind the oak desk, whatever the case may be, you'd be the best damn whatever it is that you promised you said you would do and you do your job. You know,
I know Ken Barr would be, if he turned up at a club with a band and there was one person that had paid to get in, that'd be still like the best show he's ever done.
And he'd put it
on professional from start to finish. And
of course,
whether it's one or 25,000 or 50,000.
Of course.
He's very much along. And now Dan is as well. I mean, some of that stuff Dan Stevenson does is a right headache. But if it's all done right, he can go really smooth. Long days, hard work, but it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he'll fly cars and trucks and do what he needs. That there was another one that was... I did that Fast and Furious thing before Christmas. I did the loadout for that.
Yes,
and I've never seen that. And that was like being back with the coupe with all the tricks and the cars going up there and petrol tankers. It was
crazy, isn't it?
There's a lot to go wrong there, but those guys were very cool. It was their first loadout, but a lot of them had been on it for a long time. And a bit different to a rock show, but still the same, lots of PA and lights and
a lot of moving parts.
Stuff in the air that can go wrong, and it was all really well put together. I got a lot of respect for that. I mean, they're coming back round in April, so I hope to go and have a look at it.
Good for you.
Yeah,
well, like I said, for all the big things and the big things coming down the pike and all the possible shows and stuff like that. By the way, you did see the poster from Iron Maiden go out about the tour, right?
No.
Yeah, they announced
it. They're not touring still, are they? I thought they'd give up.
No.
They're getting on a bit now, them lot.
Stop it. They're coming out. 2018. I mean, it was no more. You and I did that show Thursday, and it was Saturday morning, and I saw the poster. I was like,
things on Bookspace about it. In fact, I had an interesting conversation with a few people on Maiden thing on Bookspace about, they were all getting a bit wound up with each other about whether Blaze Bailey was any good or whether he wasn't. And I chipped a few things in, and one guy actually said, I've just deleted my comments because somebody with far more information on the inside, and I respect... Well, I had to work on my welfare place. You have much respect for you too.
I'm just telling you, okay, what I'm going to do is later on, it's probably later on tonight or tomorrow, I'm supposed to be getting with Rick anyway, and I'm going to be, you know, we're doing a post-produce, you know, on the show that you and I did, you know, this past Thursday for the load-in, and this tip here, and I'm going to just send it to them. I'm going to send it to Iron Maiden and go, Batty has been running his mouth about you, and I think you need to hear this.
One of you needs to get on this and listen to it. I spoke to Lonely Hearts.
Oh, no, I have not. Yes, I have not spoke to her, but you know, I saw the post that you shared with me, you know, about the video and stuff like that, and I listened to it. Yeah, I'm so impressed with you.
The two sisters, just like Nashville, love them.
Yeah, she's got the natural talent for all of that too. She's cutie too. I was like, wow, Batty, you're starting to get like a little, you know, niche for this. I was like, what the hell?
No, and their dad is one of the best steel guitar players you've ever heard.
Oh wow!
He's been off out doing some country and western gigs in America in the summer with not Reba McIntyre, somebody huge.
Okay.
And him and his daughters get to play at Keith Richards' birthday parties and all sorts.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna have to make this happen. Yeah, I'm trying to get you back out on the road, even if it's just for one leg, with Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
You need to.
Oh yeah, we could do that. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It would.
Especially when they do Tennessee, Memphis, or
Whatever. I mean, I don't care. You know. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then when you're standing there and you're loading them in, all you got to do at that point is just hand them the phone.
Yeah, here he is. Bruce, here comes. Speak to this lady here.
He's a radio DJ, too. He gets it. He understands. You know?
He gets it.
He would appreciate it. He would totally appreciate it.
He would, and they all would.
They all would. I think they all would have a fantastic time with it. Are you kidding?
Just kidding. It's getting out there. They'd all get on fine. They'd love it.
I am. I'm gonna send them an email and stuff, and then that title is going to be Batty Walsh is running his mouth about Bruce.
Yeah. How good you guys are.
I'm going to make it sound like it's some serious, you better check this out.
Get in there. Get him in that little studio there. I'm looking at sat in the corner there playing acoustic.
Whatever. If you can make that happen, man, are you kidding? Dude, that would be historic. That would be legendary. That would be fantastic.
Dave and show you some magic tricks.
Yes. Yes, that would be amazing. Well, listen, sweetie, I'm going to let you finish your gallon of tea in a cup.
Yeah.
Make sure it's probably still hot. Thank you so much, honey, for all the time you spend with us here on the station. And again, I adore you. You are just an absolute gem to me.
You're too kind.
I know, because everybody else is going, are you talking about who we're thinking of talking? Yeah, I am. Yeah. And now, of course, you know, you and I, we're not done. You know, I gotta figure out how to make you like a total character around here. So
I know. I'll have to come over, get one of them blue cards.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Well, listen, honey, get you some rest, you know, and, you know, and like I said, because I know it's still kind of early. You still have a chance where if you wanted to shut, you know, one eye for a minute, you could.
I could. I've still got to get through this tea. I've got to get my snorkel on. Dive into this vat.
Do what you have to do, honey. I gotta play some metal and stuff. We got a friend that stopped in, you know, to sit with Phil for a minute. Yeah. So I'm gonna let them take over here after a little bit and play some music. But I'll tell you what, baby doll, you and I, we're gonna catch up real soon, okay?
Yeah, you say hi to them guys coming in. I'm gonna sit and watch for a bit anyway, so
okay.
Hello to inform me.
Not a problem, honey. We'll talk.
All right, speak to you soon.
All right.
Take care. Bye, America. Bye, Wolf. bye-bye now.
Mr. Kevin Batty Walsh calling in all the way from the UK. I love it when the future checks in with the past, because it only happens right here on Radio Memphis and Memphis Metal Mondays for your weekly Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series tip. Tip number 21, someone else's playpen. If you are in someone else's playpen, you have to abide by their rules or else someone could really get hurt. And there's, you know, even though that's a very deep and a very heavy tip, you know, there's so much to learn from that. And if you guys, golly, I mean, you know, Batty hit it right on the nail. Make sure, you know, that you're very respectful of where you are and whose rules you are playing by. Because, again, that's just for the safety factor of it all. All right, good deal. Now, would you guys understand also, too, don't forget, if you miss any of these tips, you know, what we do is we pop them up at the radio-memphis.com, our website, and you can actually click in. You can actually click on shows. You'll see Memphis Metal Mondays. You'll also see Radio Memphis, the Road Crew Radio Series button. Click on that, and, you know, you'll be able to listen to some of the past tips that we've had, you know, and, of course, some of the interviews and some of the other different stuff. That way, you'll always, always stay informed, and you'll never, never have to wonder what you're going to do if you're out on the road, you're in the studio hanging out, or you're at some cool event.
Radio Memphis. Tune in every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Central to Radio Memphis for your weekly tips in the studio, on the stage, and out on the road. It's all part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series, and it's only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.